you're live. Asia! Come on, you're the one who stumbled this time!
I am sorry, it's just because it's always difficult to get the momentum to go into. It's like so jarring suddenly being on the podcast.
I get you. It is weird because we have like a really proper conversation before we start, and then all of a sudden it's just like, right, let's go. And then it feels like very stilted. Sorry, continue.
Hello.
Hello.
My name's Asia.
And my name is Manvir.
And welcome. Oh.
I don't know who says that. You say it.
I feel like we just swap every week. Do you want to say it this week?
Okay, sure. And welcome to Audacious Aunties. So, why don't we do it with the person who's hosting that week says the welcome to Audacious Aunties?
Oh, that's really smart.
I'm just trying. What can I say?
And that way, people who are paying attention will know from this moment who is hosting the episode.
Rather than us wasting, you know, 3 minutes just talking about, like, something that isn't related to the episode at all, just leaving our audience on the brink, whereas now they get a hint, you know?
They're like, ooh. What's now we're going to talk about? I guess we'll find out in 3 minutes.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm hosting today. But before we get to that, how are you, Asia?
I am good. You know, I very much, my emotions to the world are so numbed.
Okay.
That I just don't really feel things anymore. In the sense that, like, yesterday, although I... recently, since I don't know when people are going to be listening to this, the big like news in America that, you know,
the Capitol was
white
stormed.
Supremacists or whatever had stormed Capitol Hill, and nothing. I was just like, this is a joke.
Even though it's just a terrible, terrible thing. But I hope that you are doing okay.
I'm doing all right. I'm just trying to get through. You know, taking it a day at a time.
Okay.
Need to get work done. But it's just sad because work is sad. It's all I've got left in my life. So.
Oh, no. Oh, don't let work dictate your life, Ashley. That just does not sound fun.
Well, I mean, if I don't do work, then I'll just be lying on my bed all day. Like, okay. What would I do?
Just create a healthy relationship. I don't know. I'm not your therapist. What can I say?
In normal times, it wouldn't be like this. It's just because of the pandemic. How are you?
How am I? I'm doing well. I think that in spite of everything, with the second lockdown, I'm feeling okay. And I don't know whether or not that's because I'm experiencing second lockdown in Edinburgh, which is my university hometown rather than hometown Birmingham. So it feels like a change of scenery, even though I know it's going to be very mundane. But I'm excited to have my daily walk in a different, you know, scene. So it should be nice. Can I just say that you inspired me, Asia? And aww. I have also made a word doc for today's episode, which is basically like copying and pasting from Wikipedia, but it's synthesizing that information, so you know?
Exactly. That's the beauty. And also with the word doc, you can like go to other websites and then like slot in information from there in between the Wikipedia stuff, and then you don't need to frantically click between tabs. You can just look at your word doc.
Exactly. It's enhanced Wikipedia. What can I say? This is Audacious Aunties, enhanced Wikipedia. So today I'm going to talk about the Banana Republic and like how that's emerged as a cultural movement in mainly Central America, and how the arts movement has evolved around that, because it's just such a big thing. And I think a lot of people know the term Banana Republic, but I think past that it's a very face value kind of idea, if you haven't
read
into the history of it.
I don't really know anything about Banana Republic beyond that. But why does it sound... Is that the name of, like, a company?
Well, we're going to find out, Kitty Winkles. We're going to go on a journey. It's to do with, like, companies that own bananas. And
right.
Yeah.
I don't know why that sounds so familiar. Like,
oh, no, the Banana Republic is a company as well.
Oh, I knew it.
You smart little girl. Yeah, no, so it's a company, but yeah, it's not involved in this story today, even though it is based around that. Yeah, I hope you're all buckled in for a wild history lesson, to say the least.
I'm so excited.
Exactly. And also, I'm going to bring back not just one, but two seasons of Audacious Aunties. I'm bringing back Poetry and Art Kids.
Yay!
I know, it's going to be lit. Anyway, so starting with the history of it. So, from what Wikipedia says, the history of the Banana Republic began with the introduction of the banana fruit in the US in 1870 by this guy called Lorenzo Dow Baker. And he bought bananas into Jamaica and sold them into Boston at a profit of 1,000%. That's
that
wild.
If I understood economics, I'm sure I'd be even more shook than I currently am. I'm currently very shook.
It's a wild statistic, and it just gets wilder from here. So it became very popular with Americans because it was like very nutritious, and it was also less expensive than locally grown fruit in the US, like apples. So here's also a wild statistic. In 1913, 25 cents, which is the equivalent of roughly like $6.50 in 2019 American currency, that bought a dozen bananas, but it only bought two apples.
Oh, wow!
I know. But that's also, so even if you look at that statistic and you think about how much fruit cost then, you really understand how expensive fruit is. It's like a commodity.
Mm-hmm. Which is, like, really bad because, like, fruit was so essential to, you know, being a healthy person.
Yeah.
And, like, having good health. But that actually reminds me of, there's this Horrible Histories episode where there's, like, this peasant family and they're, like, talking about how their neighbours have just come back from, like, this fancy trip abroad. Oh, it's, like, back in, like, the early 1800s. No, I don't know when bananas came into England, but they're in England. And
oh, my God, I know which episode you're talking about.
There's, like, a banana and then she's, like, they're like, ah, oh, ha, ha, we have a pineapple. And then the person is like, oh, I'm so annoyed, scuppered again. And then she, like, bites into the banana, like, with the peel on.
Yeah. One of our friends, Fiona, shout out to Fiona. So her grandma lived in America. And I remember when we went to go and visit her grandma showed us a video that was very popular when she was a child on, like, how to eat a banana. Do you remember this video?
I do not remember
it was like detailing, like, you know, that you had to peel the banana, and it was like done in like a very cute, like, child-friendly song, because like this was when bananas were becoming like incredibly popular, I'm assuming, in the wider American public eye. And it's just what a concept, you know. But anyway, continuing with the story, because we're only one paragraph in, kids. In the 19th century, there are three, at this point, American corporations. The United Fruit Company, the Standard Fruit Company, and the Coamo, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Fruit Company. And they dominated the cultivation of bananas. In firstly Honduras, and then surrounding countries around that in Central America. Like, when they say that they took over the country's economics, like, they really took over the country's economics. They were almost, like, competing between one another. And it was unhealthy because there were only three companies that were monopolizing banana trade. But at the same time, it was healthy because they were all regulating one another.
I see what you mean. I mean, that's the almost the argument for capitalism, isn't it? You break one another, but it's all about trying to be the best.
Yeah, exactly. So it's disgusting. And the issue with that idea as well is that you're not really wanting to regulate one another. Like, that's not the goal of it. That's just an excuse for it. So as soon as you can, like, stop regulating one another and one does manage to get a monopoly over it, that's when, like, democracy crashes.
Yeah.
And so basically in the 1930s, the United Fruit Company became so big that it owned 1,400,000 hectares, which is 3.5 million acres of land in Central America and the Caribbean.
Oh my God.
It was like the single largest landowner in Guatemala, this like foreign company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you get the phrase Banana Republic, because it's demonstrative of how a country can be completely enwrapped by the trade of just one single thing, and how that thing can completely control government and politics through it.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I never knew that. I learn something new every day.
Yeah. To continue on with this story, what basically happened was that in 1912, basically, you know how I said that the United Fruit Company managed to eventually own so much land? This is how they managed to get that monopoly. So, in 1912, the Cuyamel Fruit Company existed. And this American mercenary general called Lee Christmas overthrew the civil government of Honduras to install a military government friendly to foreign business. And when I say foreign business, I mean America.
Right.
Well, I mean, when Wikipedia says foreign business, they mean America. So in the early 20th century, the American businessman Sam Zemery, who founded the Cuyamel Fruit Company, basically established this banana stereotype, banana republic stereotype, when he entered the banana export business by buying overripe bananas from the United Fruit Company to sell in New Orleans. And then through that profit that he made from unripe bananas, he bought 15,000 acres in the Caribbean coast of Honduras for the fruit company in 1911, the Cuyamel one.
Right.
But then after that, so he managed to like grow, and then he managed to conspire with an ex-president of Honduras whose name was Manuel Bonilla, and basically they conspired to overthrow the government
In order to expand their banana business.
They basically installed like a military government.
They installed a military government by deposing the previous military government.
They conspired with Lee Christmas to overthrow the civil government. So it wasn't a military government before then, but it did become a military government now.
I understand.
That was friendly to foreign business. This is the key concept that we're going with, kids.
Got you.
And yes, the coup d'etat was a consequence of the previous government having slighted the Cuyamel Fruit Company, because they basically wanted to take away land from that company and like distribute it. You know, for the government and for the people, but obviously that ain't gonna throw. So that's when the takeover happened.
Do you understand?
Thank you. I hope everyone's keeping up. I'm just about keeping up. It's just really sad. And like the overtake was so intense that like the US dollar went on to become the legal tender currency of Honduras.
Right.
And the mercenary general Lee Christmas, he became the commander of the Honduran army. And he was later appointed.
Really promoted himself.
Yeah, and then he was later appointed the US consul to the Republic of Honduras as well.
Well, there we are then. Lee Christmas really winning out of this whole thing. Lee Christmas is the guy that bought the unripe bananas, right?
No. Lee Christmas is let me check. Yeah, no, it's Sam Zemery, who's the founder.
How did Lee Christmas enter into the story?
Lee Christmas helped to overthrow the government of Honduras. He was an American mercenary general.
Oh, you understand, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm all caught up again.
Are we all good? Is everyone good on my side? You know what? If you're confused, just look it up on Wikipedia, kids. But the point is that, like, everybody now has a better understanding of what Banana Republic is.
Yes, and we are ready to get into the poetry and art.
Exactly. So, you know the book, 100 Years of Solitude? 100 Years of Solitude? Well, that book is very much based around the idea of a banana republic, and it talks about it constantly in the made-up land of Makonda. So that's a really big effect of like how banana republic politics has shaped literary patterns. And there's also a poem that directly refers to this. So in the book Canto General, which was a book written by Pablo Neruda, who's a Chilean poet, he basically wrote a poem that denounced foreign corporate political dominance of Latin American countries, with this poem called The United Fruit Company. The second stanza reads like this. Reserved for itself the most succulent, the central coast of my own land, the delicate waste of the Americas. It rechristened its territories as the Banana Republics, and over the sleeping dead, over the restless heroes who brought about the greatness, the liberty, and the flags, it established a comic opera. And that's the poem.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it's a really interesting poem, especially when it talks about the delicate waste of the Americas, because it's sexualizing the Americas in a very feminine manner. I don't know how I feel about that, but it definitely gives the Americas the idea of being like a feeble, weak woman that's being manipulated by US corporations.
I get what you mean. That's the vibe that I got from it. It feels like it's almost like a, I want to say it's like a cry for help, but like almost resigned to its fate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very much the idea, because he wrote this, El Canto General, which the anthology in which this was published, that came out in 1950, which was after the whole takeover, which happened in 1912-ish time.
How long are the, so like the companies, the United Fruit Company or whatever, what happened to that? Did they just kind of like peter out of existence?
They still exist, but because they've changed names now, basically. But like, it's just this big issue that just keeps on getting worse and worse. So there, in the 1940s, there were a lot of constitutional like crises that were happening, and it led to reforms in the 1950s in Honduras, which was actually really good that these reforms were allowed to happen. So it gave workers like permission to organize, and in 1954 there was a general strike in northern Honduras, which actually led to better pay for workers, and it seemed like something was actually happening that was very productive.
Yeah.
But in 1963, there was a coup d'etat on the Honduran government. And
not again.
Yeah, and it basically happened 10 days before there was a scheduled election. Yeah. So,
you know what? That is so dramatic. Because you know what's interesting? That, like, I don't know, it just, it always feels like when things are happening in real time in your life, it feels like they're really big and intense. Mm-hmm. And like everything that's happened this year, you're like, whoa, this is like wild. We're like living through history or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're like, surely things couldn't be like worse or this or like more dramatic than this. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm just like, if I was in Honduras in 1963 and a coup d'etat happened 10 days before the election, I'd be like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
This is all like a mess. It's just like
it's blowing up.
It feels like it's happening, but it's always happening. It's always really happening.
Basically, this guy called Arellano, he replaced a guy called Morales as the president of the country, and this initiated 2 decades of military rule. And the worst thing was that the previous president had basically instituted progressive labor laws and an agrarian reform policy, which prompted accusations of like communist sympathizers within the government. And the US saw this and they were like, oh my gosh, no commie, this is like Cold War politics coming into play. And so this guy took over the government with backing from the US.
The US try to pretend they're a beacon of democracy, mm-hmm. but they're not. They're just a beacon of capitalism, mm-hmm. and anything that goes away from that,
yeah,
it doesn't matter, democracy or not, that's not like their,
as
not
we've all seen,
capitalism, yeah. again. But I'm just saying.
Yeah, as we've all seen from the storming of the Capitol recently, it's very easy for a country to put itself on a beacon and then do nothing about it. And like, this all links back to Banana Republics, not the storming of the US Capitol, but like the military takeover links back to Banana Republic politics, because the intention of the previous president was to expropriate land from the United Fruit Company. And the US didn't want that to happen because that would be bad for them and their economy.
Crazy.
Yeah. But anyway, I now have a picture as well that I would like to share with you. You know what? I can actually copy and paste this and give it to you on WhatsApp. But it's basically a painting by Diego Rivera.
Right.
And this is a painting that's not about what happened in Honduras, but about what happened in Guatemala.
OMG, Diego!
Diego, that guy.
Diego was the guy in the Mexican mural movement episode as well. Oh, yeah. Worlds colliding.
He was also Frida Kahlo's husband.
So many worlds colliding.
Yeah. So basically, he did this painting that showed the overthrowing of this guy called Jacobo Arbenz, and he was the president of Guatemala in 1954, and the overthrowing happened by the United States through the banana companies that tried to stop peasant revolts in the region. And it's a really interesting mural, but one of the things that I personally wanted to highlight in it was that if you look at the very middle of it, from what I understand, that's a nuclear bomb with a face.
Oh, I get what you mean. Yes, it is. Yeah. Or like some sort of missile.
Yeah. Which I think is really interesting, because when you think about Cold War politics, it's very easy to think of it just being like a US-USSR kind of thing. And I think that just in general, like this whole bit of Latin America being affected by Cold War politics is something that we should learn more about, and how it does effectively tie into the Cold War. And you know, as we all know, we learn about the Cold War at school, and this is a great way to decolonize the curriculum, because the Cold War was completely it completely took over world politics, but we still only hear about it from how it affected Western countries. And yeah. This is a great example of how...
Literally, I think the only time we forayed out of the US or the US... I mean, we didn't even really talk about inside the USSR, it was literally just, like, the US. But the one time we went out was for the
Bay of Pigs invasion.
Bay of Pigs, yeah, which happened in...
Cuba,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really frustrating. And I'm not sure whether or not you could relate Cuba to the whole idea of banana republic politics, because the Bay of Pigs invasion was very much to do with sugar importations. And I think that the banana republic is widely used also to just coin one thing having such big control over a government and an economy. And I think sugar did have that impact in Cuba, so potentially we could relate it to that as well. But it all ties in with one another.
Yeah, I also like, I mean, there's bags full of unripe bananas and lots of red, and just giving my own take on this, and there's lots of red and, you know, people who are dying. And then I think the face on the missile looks like Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, I don't... I don't know what that face is meant to be, but I have a feeling it's the president at the time, which
Ebenezer Scrooge, the president, potato, potato.
And I think the president at the time is Eisenhower, I want to say, at this point.
But totally makes sense then. Yeah.
But I'm not quite sure. I should check that.
I think it must be, because didn't Eisenhower come into power in 1953?
I want to say yes. We don't have to completely revolve around US presidents all the time, you know?
You're right.
Yeah, exactly.
I really liked that. Well, like is the wrong word. It's very sad. Like, it represents much sadness and how human greed is the downfall of empathy.
I agree.
And that's sad. But the mural itself is very symbolic and well painted.
Yeah, no, I'm really sorry for the chaos of the story when I related it to everybody, but...
I enjoyed it. I followed it, you know. There was a coup here, a coup there, a couple of guys called Christmas, maybe just one guy, and then there was another guy...
Ironic that he was called Christmas, you know.
And in my mind, the way I remembered it, almost, was that Bonilla and Christmas... like a wild version of Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, let's go with that. And on that note, this has been Audacious Aunties. We need a jingle.
Do 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 no la 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 la.
I loved that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, thank you for that episode. It was really nice.
Yeah, and until next week, I look forward to seeing what you have to say.
I look forward to it too. I guess we'll find out chaotically
indeed
next week.
Alrighty. Well, This has been Audacious Aunties. Bye.
Bye.
This audio was brought to you by Manveer Dobb and Asya Iftikhar.
We don't know much, to say the least.
But if you would like to share your thoughts, knowledge, criticisms, fan mail,
then pop us an email at audaciousaunties@gmail.com.